You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
7:06, nice to have you back here up north. It's a Friday morning, it's December 5th, 2025. We, of course, have our Week in Review panel that'll be joining us in just a bit. That would be former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalists Jennifer Schulze and Mark Jacob, Parker Olson producing things down in Madison. Next hour, we've got Dr. Kristen Lyerly and Mike Clemens helping us out with sports. But first, it being this time of the day during our grown-up gift list text to win contest, it's time to share a keyword with you that you can text in using the Civic Media app. So there's chances all throughout the day to play this, and so many chances to enter because there's a different keyword each time, 7 a.m., 9, 11, 1, 3, 5, 7. And each entry puts you in the running for a daily prize of $200 and then three grand prize winners who will choose from a new snowblower, an air conditioner, a stainless steel cookware set. For all the details on the prizes, head to the website, civicmedia.us. And again, you just have to text in the keyword before 8 o'clock. And the keyword to text in this hour is card, C-A-R-D, as in Christmas card. Card is the keyword for this hour from now until 8 o'clock. Text the word card on the Civic Media app, and you will be entered for a chance to win in the grown-up gift list text to win contest. This is a multi-station, multi-state game from Civic Media. Head to the website to learn more. 7:08 on the dot right now. So let us bring in our panel, as always on this Friday morning, Jim Santel, Mark Jacob, Jennifer Schulze. Hello, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm
feeling more and more like Peter Marshall on the old Hollywood squares. And I just want to go, hello, stars. And they'll go, hi, Peter. I'm reaching way back for some of these references. But
anyway. Paul, yes, you are. Paul in to block, right?
Exactly. See, that's the one thing missing here. If we had another panelist, can you see that? Joan Esposito in the center of the screen right there. Yeah. You know, we could totally see that. All right. We could wax nostalgic about game shows all day, but we do have business to attend to. Not the least of which, Jim, maybe I'm misunderstanding because I've only read the story once, but if I read the story correctly, then once again the U.S. Supreme Court has engaged in political activism using something that's supposed to be for emergency cases and instead going in a very shadowy political direction when it comes to those rigged maps in Texas. And again, this is not a permanent ruling, but it's still a very damaging ruling. Tell folks about what Texas did and what the Supreme Court justices did.
Right. Back in November, which is just a few weeks ago, we had a three-judge panel out of Texas finding that the new lines that were drawn there in Texas, these five new districts we've been talking about, that they accomplished a racial gerrymander, basically disenfranchising people of color, saying this is outrageous and directing that there be new lines drawn. Well, what happens, of course, is Greg Abbott and basically the president as well do what they always do. As you're indicating, Pat, they run directly to the Supreme Court, which they can do. The Supreme Court, you may recall, through a fellow named Sam Alito, exercised his emergency authority, suspended that, and now, as of yesterday, have entered yet another sort of preliminary stay on all this. But you're absolutely right. This is another invocation. Here we go again, of the shadow docket. And basically the Supreme Court, majority of the Supreme Court said that the lower court had improperly inserted itself into an active primary campaign, causing much confusion, upsetting the delicate federal-state balance. Texas likely to succeed on the merits of its claim that these new drawings of lines there are proper, and so has restored, if you will, those five districts, a majority a Republican. Significantly, once again, we've got a concurrence written by Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, 17-page dissent by Elena Kagan and the others. And all this comes just days before a December 8th deadline for candidates to run in Texas. And we're back in it again.
There's all kinds of analogies, Mark, that we could go with on this. It's something like somebody is stabbing you and you're going to a court saying this person's trying to kill me. And that person says, no, I'm not. And it's the court, you know, can you make them stop stabbing me while we determine if they're trying to kill me or not? And the Supreme Court's going, well, we'll get around to determining if he's trying to kill you. But in the meantime, the stabbing can continue. This gerrymandered map gets to be locked in place while they decide whether it's a rigged map or not. That is turning the judicial system we used to know on its head.
Right. And it's establishing the facts on the ground, and, you know, somewhere down the road, we'll decide what actually is justice in this country. But right now we're going to let the Republicans steal 5 seats. So, I'm sorry. I just don't think the Supreme Court's a legitimate body anymore. I feel like that they have made so many bad rulings, and they've, you know, the immunity thing last year was just horrendous for them to decide that the president of the United States is above the law. And so, I mean, I don't know how we get it back. I think we get it back maybe with elections and adding justices to the Supreme Court, because otherwise these guys are just going to rule bad things over and over again to kind of thwart democracy and justice.
And Jennifer Schulze, you took this a step further and took a look at the Tennessee special congressional election this week. And the headline was that, well, Republicans won, but they won very, very narrowly. But you expanded the point further to go, well, they shouldn't have been able to win, but they did their own gerrymandering in Nashville, in Tennessee.
Right. Two cycles ago, the Republicans in Tennessee took the city of Nashville and cut it up into a pizza, basically, where there had been one Democratic congressman who'd been there for 20 years in a, you know, sea of blue, right? Here's Nashville and here's the rest of Tennessee. The Republican legislature there took it and they, you know, I don't know, just went like Wolverine through Nashville, and so created all of these funny looking districts, and so that a Democrat could not win. I mean, that was the goal, could not win, and has not since. Republicans have had each of those districts in that funny shape thing, and frankly, the fact that Afton Ben did as well as she did, I think is a huge thing for everybody. That means that a lot of Republicans came out and voted for her. And you can see Republicans are very, very nervous about what's ahead.
And Mark, you made the point that again, John Roberts looks like such a nice guy. And he said all the right moderate things during his confirmation hearing and since that time. And again, the number of people saying I told you so may not be very large, but they are being very loud right now because he is who we thought he was.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you know, he was not as radically right as, you know, Scalia and Alito and like that. But I mean, I do think that a lot of people thought that the Supreme Court would be this kind of moderating influence on politics in this country, and, you know, would roll back if the left got too far, and would roll back if the right got too far. But really, they just, Roberts especially has, I mean, the rulings that he's made since these three Trump people got on have been just outrageous, you know, and I'm sorry, you know, Trump should be in prison right now. He should not be president. And so he's named 1/3 of the justices of the Supreme Court. I just can't take it seriously.
And now it's time for True Confessions with Jim Santel, because Jim, I honestly don't know your view on this, whether you're about to say, yeah, I actually thought he might be kind of moderate, and I'm really disappointed at where he's gone, or this is your moment to go, I have always known this is what this guy was going to be like. So where are you on Justice Chief Justice John Roberts?
You know, at the time that he was in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, remember, he very notoriously said, oh, all I do is call balls and strikes. Remember
yes.
that?
Yep, yep.
And you go back, a lot of us looked at it. I was a little bit in that camp and looked back. He's written some memorandums in his past that support the notion of a very strong executive branch. And as Marcus just said, and Jennifer as well, it has blossomed wildly. So it's always been out there in a trunk. And I would simply comment that in addition to this grant of basically supreme authority to the presidency in July 1 of 2024, recognize that John Roberts has also led the pack when it comes to the evisceration of voting rights. Probably the Supreme Court sometime soon is going to put the final blow with John Roberts' pen on it to the Voting Rights Act of 1964. He has never liked it. He's always said, we've moved beyond that. Now we've got to do something we got to be concerned about voting, but not that. And the other big issue, of course, many others, is religion. If you allege that your faith tells you that something is wrong and the government is not giving you money, not permitting you to do something by virtue of the Establishment Clause, you know who wins? Religion does. And that has also been at the forefront of his practice here. We saw a little bit of a chink in that recently when he decided that a Rastafarian probably did not have the right to go ahead and pursue his claims. But there are other areas where somewhat predictable. And again, it has blossomed in ways that I don't think anybody would have predicted 20 years ago.
No, it just feels like that part of the judicial branch, as well as, of course, the legislative branch, have completely abdicated any checks and balances, have abdicated oversight to the point, Mark, where I feel like the word monarchists, it's not that they just want to capitulate and, well, whatever Trump wants to do. And James talks about, you know, a strong executive branch. Well, strong to the point of you're basically supporting a monarchy.
Yeah. And it's a monarchy that's white supremacist, too.
Right.
That's the thing that's so, you know, alarming is, you know, as Jim pointed out in the Voting Rights Act, Roberts has said, as he's systematically stripped the power of it, and it, you know, the last blow might fall very soon. He keeps on saying that, well, we don't need it anymore because we're post-racial. You know, we don't
have right.
Read the comment sections.
Right, and he's saying that at the same time that Donald Trump is calling Somali immigrants garbage.
Right.
You know, I mean, and not just because they're immigrants, because they're black immigrants, and no person with a brain would think that racism is completely solved in this country, but the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court seems to think so.
All right. Well, let's switch gears to something lighter before we have to pause here, and then we'll get into more of the week's headlines. But Mark, you tipped me off that FIFA, the governing body of world soccer, is introducing its own peace prize. Step aside, Nobel Committee. There's now going to be the FIFA Peace Prize. Is that going to be announced as early as today? Are we taking bets on who might win it?
Yeah, they're doing that in D.C. It's an event that the FIFA president and Trump are doing, where they're announcing the draw for the World Cup, which is going to take place in the U.S. and Mexico and Canada. Mm-hmm. And they just invented a FIFA Peace Prize, and everyone thinks that Trump's going to get it, you know. And I mean, FIFA historically is a very corrupt organization, so it's not a big shocker that they would want to give a Peace Prize to the guy who keeps on blowing up boats in the Caribbean.
I don't know, Jennifer. Are you on DraftKings right now? Are you taking bets on whether Trump gets this?
I wonder if they'll make the presentation at the Donald Trump Institute of Peace.
Oh, God.
The building that he renamed this week, even though the government doesn't own it. He took it and put his name on it.
He put his own name on the Institute of Peace, which I got to tip my
cap. He is so hungry for that Nobel.
I got to tip
it
my cap
disgusting.
To California Governor Gavin Newsom put out a parody of the KFC, the KFC Institute of Veganism is on that same building. It's just a great spoof. The Week in Review panel continues here in just a little bit. Plenty of headlines to go through, but again, our keyword for the Text to Win contest is CARD, C-A-R-D. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Nice to have you back. Just about 7:23 now. I'm Pat Kreitlow here on the Civic Media Radio Network. CARD, C-A-R-D, as in Christmas card. CARD is the keyword to text in before 8 o'clock on the Civic Media app as part of the Grown Up Gift List contest. I have not mentioned sports-wise that the Badger women's volleyball team, they were victorious last night in the opening round of the NCAA National Women's College Volleyball Tournament. They swept Eastern Illinois. They advanced to the second round, which also will be at the UW Fieldhouse. They will host North Carolina tonight at 7. The Badger volleyball team making it to the second round of the NCAA tournament for the 13th consecutive season. There's also Badger hockey that you'll be able to hear on our station in Wisconsin Rapids coming up at 5:30, Badgers versus Notre Dame. And then we've got Badger men's basketball versus Marquette tomorrow. Coverage begins at 1 on several Civic Media stations. Head to civicmedia.us to learn more. All right, let's bring our panel back in here. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalist Jennifer Scholze, and Mark Jacob. And let's get into the difficult question that I talked to Kia Vakil about in our last hour. It is not easy to talk about our own government deciding to blow up shipwreck survivors. And that is exactly what happened. Jim, I'll end with you to talk about the law of it. But Jennifer, I have to start first, like I said to Kia last hour. What is especially upsetting to me is that, you know, the members of Congress saw this video, saw the boat get blown up, saw two guys clinging to the shipwreck, and you have Republican members of Congress who saw the follow-up strike and have somehow concluded that that was justified because they were still in a position to be enemy combatants of some sort. I don't even know what it is that actual members of Congress would see this and come to that conclusion in the name of politics.
Well, the one who made the most noise about it is Tom Cotton. And, you know, he's never said anything that would go against Donald Trump. So, frankly, I'm not surprised that he said what he said. You know, Tom Cotton does not tell the truth. But yes, the entire thing is staggering. And apparently it was 41 minutes from the first strike to the second strike. And for some reason, some people who were involved with that thought that these two people desperately clinging to a piece of wood in the ocean were still somehow enemy combatants and getting ready to launch another attack on the United States. So they decided to kill them in cold blood.
And that's
a remarkable thing.
That's assuming it was an attack anyway, because again, there's been no due process, Mark Jacob. We don't really know what was there. So, I mean, in very mob boss style, this is kill the witnesses. And Mark, that is no surprise for you coming from Tom Cotton.
Yeah, well, I used to live in Arkansas, and so, you know, I hear about Tom Cotton a lot from my friends, and he's just a terrible guy. Two years ago in my Stop the Presses newsletter, I wrote a whole column about 15 ways Tom Cotton is awful, and two of them are that he called slavery a necessary evil. You know, mm-hmm. He was defending, well, we needed to do that. Yeah, right. And he also... this just blew me away. Barack Obama named a new ambassador to the Bahamas. And Cotton said specifically that he was going to block her nomination being confirmed because to get it at Obama, because he knew that the woman was a friend of Obama's. And so for 1,647 days, there was no ambassador to Bahamas. Finally, the appointee died of leukemia without being confirmed by the U.S. Senate. And this is the kind of person Tom Cotton is. He is a terrible person.
From a legal standpoint, Jim Santel, again, most anybody that you talk to with an independent view of things sees the law as pretty clear.
Yeah, there's not a lot of rational dispute about this, whatever your political persuasion may be. So many factual problems as well. We know that, again, whether it's cocaine or fentanyl, either one of those comes predominantly from Venezuela. That's number one. But even putting that to one side, going back to fundamental notions here, even an unarmed speedboat, which these are, even it's carrying cocaine or fentanyl, is not a warship. And none of those 11 people aboard initially, and not merely the two who were survivors, also the 9 others were fighting anyone. Again, as Jennifer has just outlined, the time period on this is damning. And the notion that anyone in a military setting can pursue people who are basically no longer combatants who have all but for the virtue of the fact that they're holding on for their lives, are somehow engaged with us in a military operation and killing them. That is completely contrary to the rules of law, completely contrary to the rules of engagement. It harkens back again to things like My Lai massacre and other instances where in military situations, we have done things that are contrary to the basic fundamental tenets of armed conflict. This is not a close question.
And then to put a real exclamation point on it, Jennifer, is if it is a boat full of drugs, and I don't care if the boat is loaded with drugs, it is a fraction of what the ex-president of Honduras brought into this country, who the president pardoned this week, Jennifer.
Arguably, the former president of Honduras is one of the biggest drug traffickers in recent memory, right? I mean, responsible and in for bringing so much bad stuff into the country. And he walked out of a U.S. prison this week. So my head spins. I do not understand, there's no logic here, clearly.
No, because again, and I know I say it a lot, but I wouldn't say it if it weren't for that conviction of, no pun intended, Joe Biden or Barack Obama releasing a drug kingpin like that. It would still be the lead story days later. And this was just another day in Trump world. We will continue with our Week in Review panel coming up in just a bit. Again, a reminder, CARD, C-A-R-D, is our keyword in our Text to Win contest for our grown-up gift list. Learn more about the prizes and the rules over at civicmedia.us. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. We'll be back after the Midwest Farm Report here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up in less than 10 minutes, we will continue our 12 days of community kindness, putting a spotlight on another organization doing good things in the hometowns all around the Civic Media Radio Network. But first, a reminder that the key word for this hour is CARD, C-A-R-D. CARD is what you want to text in on the Civic Media app to be eligible for one of the prizes in the Grown-Up Gift List Text to Win contest. Let's continue things now with Jim Santel and Jennifer Schulze and Mark Jacob, our Week in Review panel, looking at all the stories of the week, which has to include, Jennifer, every cabinet meeting looks like it's right out of North Korea. I clearly touched a nerve here. But the one this week with the President of the United States repeatedly dozing off and then going on one of the most racist rants, even by his standards, this was one doozy of a cabinet meeting this week.
It is mind-boggling to me how they go around the table and say the things that they say, and none of it is truthful. And some of it is so vile. The Secretary of Agriculture actually sat there and congratulated him for cutting $40 billion, I think, from food stamps. And, you know, what a remarkable accomplishment. And he beat Joe Biden at that, she said. But most of the time they are saying things that are just so Marco Rubio is sitting there sitting next to him, gesturing to him, and he is sleeping.
Yes. It's Sleepy Joe. Tell us how it's Sleepy Joe. Daniel Dale, the longtime fact checker, we read through yesterday's program all of the many corrections, Mark, that had to be made to what was being said. And it's just astounding that, again, people just kind of shrug it off.
Yeah, I mean, well, number one, saying how, you know, he's brilliant and he did all these great things and that, you know, but it's amazing how much they're still blaming Biden, the guy who was so incompetent he couldn't get anything done 11 months ago. But now that he's not president anymore, he casts a giant influential shadow over all of our lives. It's bizarre how they do that.
It really is. Hey, tell us about your column as well over at stopthepresses.news. The males of MAGA manspread their insecurity. This seems to tie in well to the obsequiousness that was the cabinet meeting.
Oh, yeah. And that actually, you know, posted, you know, before all this, the Hegseth stuff where, you know, and this macho kind of posturing they do, it just drove me crazy. And the impetus for it was they're insulting of female reporters, you know, calling them piggy and, you know, stupid and stuff like that. I mean, these are very insecure men. I mean, and my point was that mature, self-actualized males do not act this way. They don't feel like they have to bring everyone else down. They don't have to share all these crazy memes that Trump does of him, you know, as a wrestler or as a Colonel Kilgore in Apocalypse Now. Trump, you know, no person who was, you know, felt good in their own skin would constantly project crazy macho images of themselves. And I just thought I'd point that out.
Well, and again, it's not just the president. I think of all the people who have decided to become part of a masked police force that right. does not provide, you know, any kind of, you know, just cause for arrest. And that is my reminder to all American men out there that you're going to come to a fork in the road about whether you have, you know, compassion and a sense of service, or if you're going to let toxic masculinity drag this country down. Jim Santel, you've been in countless courtrooms. You've had to defer to judges, frankly, that you just don't like, and you maybe think we're completely wrong on something. I cannot believe you engaged in the kind of buttering up that you saw in that cabinet meeting this week.
And not even close. I won't go into the specifics, but I am in courts, state courts principally now, in Milwaukee County, other places in southeastern Wisconsin. And there are many times when judges will say, Mr. Santel, I disagree. You're wrong on that. And that's not because I'm ethically wrong, because we've got arguments to be made about various things. And the answer is we move on, even though inside I'm thinking, gosh, that judge may not have understood my argument charitably, other things like that. One never ever says these kinds of things. Why? And this is, I think, the point behind your question, Pat, because you are saving it for another day, right? Every single thing that this president says out there in the public domain is going to come back in some way, probably in litigation. We have seen it, especially with the ill-fated prosecutions of Comey and Letitia James. He says all of these things out loud, and they sink the very initiative that he wants to pursue. In those cases, prosecutions of his enemies. These comments about Somalis and about others, there's so many to pick from. They are, in fact, picked up by litigants in court who say that this is what the president is saying in the context of discrimination cases, in the context of cases involving grants from the federal government, all kinds of things. This is the chief executive, and his words mean something. They're outrageous, they're racist, they're inaccurate, but they can have an effect upon things inside and outside the courts, and they can come back, frankly, to sink the very initiatives that his Justice Department wants to pursue.
Jennifer Schulze, was it you that mentioned a little bit ago that the President of the United States has just changed the calendar on days that you can get into national parks for free?
Yes, Pat, it was me.
Oh, dear.
Apparently,
now I'm forcing you to repeat it again on air, but tell folks the news.
So apparently there are a handful of days that you can go to a national park and admission is free. Two of those days have long included Martin Luther King Day and more recently Juneteenth. Those days are no longer on the free day calendar per Donald Trump, but he has added his birthday as a free day to go to the national parks.
Oh,
so
Lord.
All the other days are, you know, like Memorial Day or 4th of July weekend and things like that. But racism is everywhere. It's spread through the entire administration, even the national parks, which we know he's already done a lot to change the exhibits and displays at national parks as it relates to Black and Brown Americans.
Exactly. The racism is real, which allows us to end on a higher note, Mark, to talk again about the book that you and your brother put together, about the opportunities that were provided in basketball to create a team of legends, thanks to a guy who probably couldn't have made the team back in the day.
Yeah, the book is called Globetrotter, How Abe Saperstein Shook Up the World of Sports. It's about a 5'3" Jewish guy in Chicago who started the Harlem Globetrotters, an all-Black basketball team, and, you know, knocked down a lot of racial barriers and changed the way people looked at sports and looked at race relations in this country.
All right. Mark Jacob has his Stop the Presses newsletter at stopthepresses.news, including his video series On Target with Stephen Beschloss. You can read Jennifer Schulze's Indistinct Chatter column on Substack. You can also follow her on Blue Sky. And, of course, Jim Santel will be back tomorrow morning, 9 to 11 a.m. for Amicus, a law review, replayed on Sunday. Head over to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, to learn more. Panel, thank you again so much. Have a great start to the weekend. We'll see you, most of you, next week. Mark, I know you'll be off. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks so much, all of you. Have a great day.
Take care, Pat.
Stay warm, everybody.
We're sure trying. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's now take on our 12 days of community kindness and talk a bit about what's happening in Amory, one of the places across the Civic Media Radio Network, the Amory Hospital and Clinic Foundation, and the work that they do. And so let's welcome Lisa Reloaf to the program as well, director of the Amory Hospital and Clinic Foundation. Lisa, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, thank you. And thank you for getting the memo that we're wearing red today. It's nice for somebody to color coordinate here. So let's talk about the Amory Hospital and Clinic Foundation and what you do for the hospital. You know, a lot of that work might be behind the scenes, but is very necessary for the support of a hospital like the one in Amory. Tell us more about the foundation.
Absolutely. Thank you. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We are separate from the hospital, closely partnered with the hospital, with our own board of directors. We work to support patients trying to improve health and well-being through what we can influence with the hospital. So we work to raise grants and funding for important initiatives. And we have a variety of funds. So I'll talk about our Good Samaritan Fund. I'll talk a little bit about some of the equipment, some of the building and remodeling that has been able to happen, and because of philanthropy. So very important, and it's wonderful to be able to be part of this work to make a really positive difference for our community of just 3,000 people to provide excellent healthcare here close to home.
For folks that don't that aren't aware, in a lot of our hometowns, the local hospital might have a foundation. Why does a hospital need a foundation?
That's an excellent question, and the first question that I usually get, because people, of course, look at their bill and say, "Oh goodness, you know, why would a hospital need more money?" Hospital finance is very complicated, but if I summarize the need for a foundation. A year ago, we replaced a CT scanner for the hospital. That one piece of equipment cost $1.3 million. And that is not the kind of funding that is in a regular budget. So, and that, of course, is not the only piece of equipment that needs to be replaced. We are constantly replacing with newer technology. We are working to try to meet the increasing needs of our patients, and that's medical equipment, it's training, it's also occasionally remodeling, like we've done with our chemo infusion center that opened in July 2023. And we recently, in March of 24, we opened our expanded emergency department, which nearly doubled the size for patient care. So those are some great things that have been made possible because of philanthropy. Private donations, foundations, grants, all of it works.
Yeah, whether it's like an auxiliary or you know, a booster club, or you know, in some cases like a PTA, you know, these places that help support and supplement what an institution is already doing. And so that includes events that you host to raise funds.
Yes. We've hosted two events this year. We've had a golf tournament that is typically in August, and we also had what was called a Wonderful World of Wine. We held our fifth fundraising event with six courses of food, expertly paired with wines. And that fundraiser, both of those fundraisers, raised funds for what is called our Good Samaritan Fund. And that fund works to partner with patients who are in critical financial need, to help pay for things like prescriptions or durable medical equipment. And recently we've opened up a clothing closet at our West campus and also here on the main campus in Amory to be able to provide just general clothing, might be typical sweatshirt, sweatpants for dignified discharge. And unfortunately, there are patients who come in critical state. And if they're in coming into the emergency room, clothes may need to be cut off. Well, you need something to go home in, and it's got to be more than just a paper gown. So, so things like that. And unfortunately, because of recent legislative changes that have been happening, our patients are really going to be affected. There is more and more need for that Good Samaritan Fund.
And so, to learn more about the Amory Hospital and Clinic Foundation, head to healthpartners.com. That again is healthpartners.com/foundations/Amory. Lisa Relo, thank you very much for telling us all about it as part of our 12 Days of Community Kindness. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays to you, and grateful for the opportunity. I'd love to meet with anyone and answer any questions. So please give me a call at the hospital.
Thank you so much for that, Lisa. Appreciate it. All right. Have a good start to your weekend. And coming up, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will join us, as will Mike Clemens. But one more reminder, the keyword in our text to win grown-up gift list contest is CARD, C-A-R-D. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
The phone lines are open at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842 for questions, comments, if you need a little stimulation. Here was our question of the day off the top of the program. Would you go back to driving your first car if you could? Because the Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, seems to believe that when the Trump administration decided this week to loosen environmental standards on automobiles, he said it'll probably mean the return of the wood-paneled station wagon. And he meant that in some kind of a romantic way. He says, you know, if we cut mileage requirements, you know, customers will have no more choice. The choice of what? Going back to something that got 8 miles a gallon? Is that something you would do? You've heard me talk about my first car, a 73 Plymouth Fury. You know, again, a lot of great stories. I wouldn't go back to it. I actually want cars to get better and better gas mileage. And once upon a time, they would not have done that were it not for these regulatory nudges by the government. They would have, you know, said, well, you get what you get. And now Donald Trump wants us to backslide to that. Sean Duffy thinks that it's going to lead to more choice, that people are going to somehow choose wood-paneled station wagons and bring back the minivan while we're at it and things like that. So would you go back to your first car? We're always happy to take first car horror stories here at 855-75-CIVIC. I know you're thinking, well, wait, shouldn't Dr. Lyerly be here? Shouldn't Frank be here to administer a quiz?
That's what I'm thinking.
I'd like to say that, you know, Frank is just off this week, but I choose to believe that he and Dr. Lyerly are just afraid of the competition. They knew I was about to make this late surge and pull ahead in the standings.
I can say
that now because they're not here, so they're not here to disagree with me. So
it'd be one hell of a comeback for you, Pat.
It would be an amazing comeback, one that we do not possibly have time for, and yet somehow
it's a lot of questions that you'd need.
It's a lot. We'll just have to carry on regardless of the circumstances.
It's all rigged anyway.
No.
I mean, you know.
Well, you did
heard
a couple
it.
Of times say your name first, and I don't believe your name was called, but that's very, again, when Kristen shouts her name, it's just, you know, your ear tunes into
it
that
means
apparently.
Something.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, again, in our newsletter today, a beautiful photo of Shawamigan Bay. We love getting all the reader photos. You can subscribe to our newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the top banner. Also in there was the result of last week's newsletter question, which was all about favorite holiday dishes. And so you get to read what some of the other readers sent in terms of, you know, their recipe, not their recipes, but their reaction to different types of stuffing and mashed potatoes and other holiday treats. And Ellie Bordeaux tells us that a week from today, she will share what the newsletter readers have sent in to the question of what's your favorite supper club? It's part of the Locals Love section, so we love to hear about local businesses. And so What's that local supper club that is still around in your community that you love to go to? And give that a little brag. And we'd love to have your input either by subscribing to the newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com, or putting something in the comment sections right here on Facebook or YouTube if you watch the radio show, or use that Civic Media app, because again, you can use that text feature. You can use it right now and text us the word CARD. Over the next 3 minutes, CARD is the grown-up gift list, text to win. Just text the word CARD, nothing else. But then if you want to send some other text message about cars or holiday dishes, we will happily take that as well. Well, there are, along with the holiday dishes, all kinds of other holiday treats. And our garage has got more than its share of peanut butter balls that Sherry's prepared, you know, with the peanut butter and the graham crackers, and then she dips them in chocolate, and you put them on a cookie sheet, and you put them out in the garage or out on the back deck for a while and let them get all solidified and everything. Well, we now have a couple of new holiday treats that we just prepared here as well. We have never made a bucket of brandy slush before.
Oh, yes.
And so, and this was all Sherry. I can't take any credit for it. Yeah. She was getting very frustrated because she made it on like Sunday or was it whenever it was. And it did not freeze right away. It took a few days to freeze.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if that's normal or not, but it finally did. We could finally enjoy it yesterday and it was perfectly good. I just don't know if maybe there was a little too much brandy, but you know,
no such
can
thing.
There be? Yeah. Can there be?
And that's then, a big one in my aunt and uncle's house, the brandy slush.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We tell the story all the time. We weren't there, but we heard it from a close friend that they were at a function where they went to go get the brandy slush bucket from out on the deck.
Yeah.
And they opened up the door, and all they saw was an empty bucket and their dog running into the house. Yeah. And the dog runs in the house at full speed right into a wall. So I think we know who got into the bucket of brandy slush.
Did you see I believe that Jane and Greg talked about it on This Shouldn't Be a Thing the other day, the drunk raccoon?
Yes. Yeah, if you haven't seen that on social media, take a look. There's a liquor store. I don't know if it was a grocery store with a liquor aisle or a full-on liquor store, but you see in the video, you see these broken bottles. You see little puddles of liquor along the floor. And then in the bathroom is a raccoon passed out. I mean, just splayed out, all four.
Absolutely.
Just spread eagle.
Yeah.
Passed out on its stomach. And that is the holiday parties that we grew up on.
Yep.
You ever notice more and more companies all the time no longer have, you know, the holiday parties where it was like open bar. And I can tell you stories about the old TV 13 Christmas parties.
Oh boy.
But I am contractually obligated to not, just to say that we had great parties. Whereas last night we were at the clinic Christmas party, which was at the Pablo Center in Eau Claire. It was a much more formal and enjoyable affair. Two drink tickets. No relationships were harmed in the making of that Christmas party, put it that way.
Or if they were harmed, they were already going to get harmed anyway.
They were already going to get there anyway, exactly. Coming up in our next hour, we'll be visiting with Dr. Lyerly. We'll also have Mike Clemens talking a little sports with us. And while we're talking about sports, you know, the Bucks, the Badger men's basketball team is facing Marquette tomorrow. You've got the Packers playing the Bears. But the real sports issue right now are those new powder blue uniform tops by the Brewers for next season and the gray pants. What? It's an outrage, I tell you, he said somewhat sarcastically. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.